When Athel Fugard's searing drama Master Harold and the Boys premiered on Broadway in 1982, apartheid was still the law in South Africa. A lot has changed since then, but we are reminded by a timely new production of the play, which tells a story of a white teenager and the two black men who befriend him, that racism is sadly not a thing of the past. Mr. Fugard has directed this new production, which stars Leon Addison Brown, Noah Robbins, and Sarah Nkuja. Charles Isherwood wrote in the New York Times that it is a powerful indictment of the apartheid system and the terrible human cost of the racism it codified and legalized. It's run at the Signatures Pershing Square Center on West 42nd Street, has just been extended until December 11th, and it is my great honor to welcome Athel Fugard back to our show. Hello.
Hello there, Leonard. Very good to be back with you.
You've described this play as your most autobiographical. It's set in 1950 in Port Elizabeth, South Africa. Is that where you grew up?
That is where I grew up. I was actually born in the desert hinterland of Port Elizabeth, but my formative years, the childhood schooling and what have you, until I left for university, were all spent in Port Elizabeth.
And did your mother run a tea room, as Hallie's mother does in this play?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Now, what about the two employees, Sam and Willie? Are they based on men that work for your family?
Absolutely. For the longest time, after, you know, as I began to sort of find my feet as a playwright, I searched around for an idea for those two men, because I wanted to celebrate them. Their impact on my life was enormous, literally enormous. And I just couldn't find the dynamic of a two-hander that would work on the stage. And it was only when I then placed a little white boy into the picture as well.
You.
That it suddenly came alive, yes.
Because your full name is Harold Athol Lanigan Fugard. So were you known as Master Harold or Hallie?
Yeah, yes. Master Harold was the way I was addressed in those days by servants and what have you.
Because in under apartheid, the less formal name was not supposed to be used by black men to address a white boy?
Absolutely. It had to be a very respectful. And yeah, that's right.
So you always Master Harold?
I was Master Harold.
Your mother might have called you Hallie.
Oh, my mother called me Hallie, yes, exactly. And eventually Sam and Willie, you know, broke through that barrier because, you know, the time I spent with them in their little dingy room at the back of the boarding house, which my mother first ran in Port Elizabeth, and then again in the tea room of the St. George's Park Cafe, Yeah, those two men were so beautiful and so decisive.
Especially Sam, I imagine, who's something of a surrogate father.
That's correct. And, you know, that highlights the essential dilemma is that in apartheid South Africa, when you've already got a white father, to want a black man to be instead your father was really asking for too much.
Why isn't Hallie's own father more important to him than this black man?
Because he wasn't a role model. It's as simple as that. My dad was a cripple. He walked on crutches. He lost the use of one leg. He had an accident in his childhood. And also, my dad was a very manageable alcoholic.
So Hallie is kind of ashamed of his father.
Very much so. Shame plays a very important role in the emotional dynamic of the play.
But it would have in South Africa as well, where status was so important.
Terribly important.
We meet Hallie as he arrives at the tea room after school where Sam and Willie are cleaning up and also practicing for a ballroom dance competition.
That's all absolutely factually correct.
And I love the whole business about the dance competition because it has it winds up becoming a metaphor for getting through life gracefully from the personal to the political.
Well, you know, as Sam himself puts it, you know, being on the dance floor especially in a championship competition, is like being in a world without accidents. And Halley, when he hears that coming out of Sam's mouth, just is stunned and says, "My God, Sam, that's beautiful." And it goes on from there, the metaphor of the dance floor.
Was ballroom dancing a major cultural force in South Africa in those days?
Oh, yes, especially among the citizens who weren't included in all the privileges that came with South Africa, the black people and our so-called colored people.
And differentiations were made. Colored people were people of mixed race.
That's correct. And this was very much codified in law. I mean, you know, if you were classified, it was called race classification, if you were classified as a colored, you were entitled to more privileges because there was a percentage of white blood in your makeup, obviously. You were entitled to privileges which the black South Africans did not enjoy.
You'd go to a better school.
You'd go to a better school. You could buy white man's liquor. Yes, a very important fact that, and so forth and so on.
Sam and Halley have a running discussion over who's the most important social reformer in history. Was that the kind of thing that you thought about when you were a teenager?
Oh, yes, very much so. I mean, very early in my education, if you can call it that, I stumbled on the Russian writers. And it was the Russian writers who taught me how to look at South Africa. Because I didn't get much, you know, Dickens couldn't help me look at South Africa.
Even though the class system plays such an important role in his novels?
Yes, I know, but didn't help me. But it was the Russians and...
With the serfs?
The serfs and the enormous complexity and size and, you know, the fact that the underprivileged, you know, were really in shackles and chained down until the revolution. All of that sort of really fed into me and made me feel very strongly that, you know, I had a link with the Russians. And there was one book in particular which my wife, and I gave it to her as a present sometime recently, which I had as a young boy, which was Tolstoy's Resurrection. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the essential hope and faith in the goodness of mankind that is embedded in that novel has a huge impact on me.
For many people, that's kind of the end of Tolstoy because it's when he becomes a religious zealot at the
end
of his life.
Yes, I know. I know. That's all right.
My guest is Athol Fugard, whose play Master Harold and the Boys is being revived on stage at the Pershing Square Signature Center at 480 West 42nd Street with an extended run until December 11th. At one point, Halley lashes out at Sam in a truly awful way, and although we realize it's really his own father he's upset with, the moment's still shocking. And a teenage boy would have that kind of power if he was white.
Oh, yes, you could. Oh, yes. Oh, yes, very definitely. I mean, if one of them had laid and they would have been justified in doing it, laid a hand on me or given me the beating that Sam said, "I want to hit him." Sam, at the moment, in response to the terrible insult he suffered from Halley, Halley spits in Sam's face. And if one of them had laid a hand on me and I told my mother and mama, that would have been the end of their job and maybe even a court case.
But on the other hand, we hear them talk about almost everything, and I'd assume that that was a rather unusual relationship in the South Africa of the 1950s.
It was. It was. But it was also one that immediately set me apart from all the other youngsters in my school years, friends like that. Yeah.
How many plays had you written before you wrote this one?
I think Master Harold and the Boys comes after, I think the chronology, I always regard The Blood Knot, which is a play I also revived at the Signature Theatre. I regard that as the watershed play, the play in which I found my own unique voice as a dramatist. And after that came a play called Hello and Goodbye, and then came a play called Busman and Leona. And I think it is somewhere in the course of the next few years that I decided to tell the story of a rainy afternoon in the St. George's Park tea room.
In the 50s. Now, although apartheid had been kind of de facto in South Africa, it was after 1948 with the election of the Nationalist Party that it became law. So were people still working things out at this point?
Yes. Yes, trying to come to terms with it and trying to understand it. I mean, obviously, as those laws piled up on the statute books, you know, the Immorality Act and then Job Reservation, all of the laws designed to protect the purity and economic well-being of the white, a small white minority. I mean, you must realize the arithmetic in terms of population figures is that 2 million white people as opposed to 27 million black people. That speaks for itself.
But Halley's relationship with Sam would have predated official apartheid.
Oh, yes, very definitely, yeah.
And would that have been a factor? If Halley had been born 10 years later, could the same relationship have developed?
Yes, well, you know, there was always, in the old South Africa and in that period when the Nationalist Party was in power and the apartheid laws were passed, there was always an understanding that in a domestic situation, the black servants had a special role. They were never regarded as equals, but they were favored.
Mm-hmm. We had a similar situation here in many parts of the country.
I know, and that is, I must say, I came over to do this production wondering, well, I wonder if this play will still resonate in any way for Americans.
Well, you originally, it was performed when apartheid was still in effect. But when you scheduled this production, which must have been a while ago, did you imagine that this country would be engaging in some of the discussion of white nationalism we've heard during this current election cycle?
No. When I got back to New York to start rehearsals and work with the designers, when Paula and I got back to New York, and I began to realize I've landed in the middle of a forthcoming presidential election. And I then started to watch what was happening around that and the two prominent candidates. You know, it came as a bit of a shock for me, quite frankly, to find that America was still engaged in debating certain fundamental issues, which I had always believed were at the core of what makes America a great nation.
On the other hand, South Africa is still going through its own political turmoil because of corruption.
Absolutely. The state of the country is unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. And we just, I don't know. I don't know how we're going to get rid of a very corrupt president. But to come from a situation like that and to land in New York and find myself in another situation in which some of the same fundamental issues were being debated.
You know, Trevor Noah has done a number of shows in which he's compared South African presidents with our future president. I don't know whether it's accurate or not, but that's a whole other issue for another time. This is the fifth production at the Signature Theater of in the last few years of your plays. I guess it's your home base. What about the actors? This one stars Leon Addison Brown as Sam and Sar Nagaja as Willie. Had you worked with them before? Because
yes,
with me, it's always thinking about you. It's Zakes Mokai and John Cunney.
That's right. No, Leon and Sar really have become very, very close personal friends of Paula, my wife, and myself. But in addition to that, in addition to just the bond of friendship, they are very accomplished actors.
Mm-hmm.
And as I pointed out to the Signature Theatre at one point that, you know, my whole theatre life has been based on, grounded in, and this is strengthened by the way I discover a certain actor and then go on to explore the potential of that one actor through various productions.
Leon was in the Terrain Driver and the Painted Rocks at Revolver Creek.
That's right.
Did the real Sam and Willie ever get to see this play?
Willie disappeared off the face of the earth, as happened so easily in South Africa in those years. No trace of him anywhere. Sam was alive when the production in South Africa, first production, was coming up. And I had arranged to fly him up to Johannesburg so that he could see what I had done with the story of those years. And he died before he could get on, before he could travel.
Now, why did you drop your name Harold? Your name is Harold Athol Lanigan Fugard.
Well, at a certain point, my dad and I came to an understanding, because his name is also Harold. He was Harold David Lanigan Fugard. One of us, there was no point in both of us running when my mother called out, Harold! So
you became Athol.
I became Athol, and my dad happily continued to be Harold.
Was writing this play your way of working through your shame of how you had acted as a teenager?
Well, I don't know how, what relationship my playwriting has to any of the dilemmas I have lived with in the course of my 84 years. But I suppose it must work something like that. I'm not conscious. I don't consciously set out and say, now, come on, we're going to do a job on you about this question of shame, which you carry around and with you.
The reason I ask is at the end of the play, we're not quite sure which way Hallie will go. Obviously, judging from your work, we know, but in the play, we don't.
I know. I didn't want to make it, I didn't want a note of false optimism.
Master Harold and the Boys is on stage at the Pershing Square Signature Center at 480 West 42nd Street. It's running until December 11th. My great thanks to Athol Fugard for being on our show again.
Great pleasure talking to you, Leonard.